Paranormal Truth and Reality with host Chris Houston. A show for those with a passion for the paranormal. And now, welcome to the show.
Welcome to Paranormal Truth and Reality. As usual, I'm your host, Christopher Houston. We are remote, setting up for Ohio State Reformatory on Sunday, 6 p.m. For those of you that are joining us, we do have some slaggers, so you're welcome to show up. We are with Rebecca Schmuck. Rebecca is actually a very well-known medium throughout the paranormal. Welcome, Rebecca.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris. How are you today?
Oh, doing well. I kicked back from a flu bug, though, unfortunately, last week, so still recovering a little bit.
Oh, no. Yeah, it's been going around, so I'm glad you're feeling better.
So, tell us a little bit about you, Rebecca. What got you into the paranormal?
Well, I have been a medium since age of 3 when I started seeing things walking through my bedroom that no one else could see. I would go into my mom's room in the middle of the night and go, there's a man in my room. And she'd come ringing and she goes, honey, you have an overactive imagination. There's nobody in your room. Go back to sleep. And I'd lay down and then the man would come and stand over my bed and stare at me. I'm like, I'm not, she'd tell me, you're dreaming or it's your imagination. I'm like, no, this guy's in my face. You know, and I did this from the time I was a very little kid. They would follow me to school. You know, they'd follow me everywhere I went, everything I did. I always had spirits with me, behind me, over my head when I slept. So, I've been doing this my entire life. Most of my childhood, I had my mother telling me, don't tell anybody or they'll think you're crazy. This, people don't do this. I thought, my mom just doesn't know. And then I got into school and I was, around my friends and I realized that none of them were talking about, seeing spirits or ghosts. So I kind of went into the closet for quite a while. It wasn't probably until my late 30s that, the paranormal shows started coming out and people started talking more about the paranormal and people, there were shows with mediums on them. I'm like, hey, I'm not the only person that can do this. It seems to be more socially acceptable to talk about. So I came out of the paranormal closet myself and started getting involved in investigations with a paranormal team, and then I kind of branched off and started doing special cases for highly volatile hauntings, and I'm pretty well known for handling those. I handled them all over the country, in Europe. I had one in Japan even.
Wow. Japan's an amazing place. I've never had the privilege of actually going, but a lot of the paranormal occurrences that go on there, a lot of the philosophy and the legends are amazing.
Oh, they are. Yeah, luckily I didn't have to go there. I just had to set it up so I could call them during the correct time. But yeah, it was a very interesting case that I did with a, they have what are called ghost houses, which are houses that they set up in front of their houses to keep evil spirits out. And this family felt that one of the spirits from their ghost house had gotten actually into their house, so I was helping them get it back into the ghost house and out of their residence. So that was an interesting case that I did.
That would be interesting. And you get a chance to get a feel for the philosophy of another country, which
right.
A lot of people really don't pay attention to.
They have a very different philosophy on death and spirituality than we do. Yeah, they're more, I would say, far more advanced than we are as far as spirituality is concerned and understanding how that works.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Spirituality and even how it all connects, I guess you could say, nature and energy. And there's a lot of Asian, Japan, China, and so forth. They tend to take a more non-philosophical approach that everything in one way, shape, or form is connected, both good and bad.
Right. Yeah. And they're very respectful of the dead and very fearful, actually, far more so than we are in, the Western culture, that they're very very respectful and very afraid that, you know, if they're not respectful or if they disrespect the dead, that something really bad is going to happen to them. So, you know, they're on a different level than we are completely.
Yeah, I've noticed that about several cultures, actually, not just the Oriental culture, but even the Hispanic culture has a bit more respect for the deceased than we do or the other side. We as Americans, right. We just kind of dive into it. Oh, gee, there's a ghost. I'm on it.
Yeah. We see more of it as a more of an entertainment factor because of all the television shows, I think. It's kind of made it people go on ghost hunts for entertainment. I think more in this country. I don't think they do that in any other country that I'm aware of. I know they have a paranormal team in Italy that I'm going to be doing some work with, but that, as far as I know, I really haven't seen any paranormal teams in, like you said, the Orient or anything, but maybe I'm just not aware of them.
Well, there's a handful. I know a few that actually are paranormal investigators throughout Japan and China. I've met a few from the Philippines. Their investigation is a lot different than our investigation here and even in the UK. We, like you said, we've kind of commercialized it a lot, so we tend to just dive headstrong in, and there's a lot of people that are in it for the thrill and the ride and so forth, where they really kind of dive into the more – it's kind of hard to explain, but the more – philosophical approach of you have to respect everything. There are certain things you do, certain things you don't do. There are places you do avoid and things that you do avoid.
Right. Good protocols,
Yeah.
That we don't have.
Yeah. Well, being a medium, I don't get a chance to talk to a lot of mediums. The last medium that I had was Susan Carter on the show, and she's a delightful lady. I love to pick the brains of those that have.
Yeah, she is. Oh, I like Susan, yeah.
Yeah, she's a wonderful lady. I've had a chance to talk to her several times. Very brilliant. Has given me quite a lot of advice on and off. I love to pick the brain of mediums because not everybody has the ability, even though we have the capability, I guess you could say.
Right.
So when you started to realize that you were physically seeing things that other people couldn't see, how hard was that to approach?
Well, considering I was a small child, it was difficult because I had people telling me that, oh, you just have a lot of imaginary friends and, you know, these aren't real people. But, you know, I'd have a spirit sit down on my bed and tell me a detailed story of their death. And I would go, you know, and tell my mom, and she's like, boy, you have a really good imagination. Where do you get all these facts from? I mean, this was before, you know, we had free access to the Internet. This was back in the AOL, you know, the modem days, you know, and you know, I was a little kid, and I was telling her things that I couldn't possibly know. And she's like, well, you have a really good imagination. What are you getting in, you know, to the book? Are you reading books or what? And I'm like, no, these people are telling me this. And she just pat me on the head and, you know, tell me, oh, yeah, that's really cute. And you know, as I got older, I would, you know, go up to my friends and I would tell them, you know, I'm seeing this for you, or you need to be careful when you do that. And they'd be like, uh-huh, you're spooky, go away. So, you know, I got to the point where I didn't say anything about it to anybody for probably 10, 15 years. I didn't say anything because I had been told, you know, that you're crazy or this is weird or you're weird, or you're, you know, goofy. You can't do that. So I think there's a lot of people, less so now, but there was a lot of people when I was growing up that had gifts that just didn't talk about it. That's just not something that you did. So it's nice that we're having this kind of a spiritual revolution now where everybody feels more comfortable talking about their spiritual side and talking about, you know, their deceased loved ones. And it's not such a taboo to do that anymore.
Well, that's the one perk that television and media actually brought on before some of the shows during what I like to call the Great Pause. I don't know if you remember or not, but at one point, the paranormal took a kind of twist. It went from scientific research and understanding and really diving into things that most people didn't see on television to dropping when parapsychology here in the United States and a lot of universities said, whoa, now this is getting a little bit too far-fetched. We had kind of this gap. And when television came in, we had an incredible rise for a little while. At first, it was cool, and then it kind of got silly. But the one thing it did do is it opened up a lot of people. They were able to talk about things that they didn't talk about before.
Right. It made it more socially acceptable to say, you know, I saw somebody standing in my room last night. Where, you know, back in, you know, 70s, even the 80s, people would have never, ever said, you know, I think I saw a ghost. So, yes, it has harbored in some enlightenment in that regard. I just don't like the entertainment factor of it. I don't think it's respectful.
I perfectly agree with that. I understand the concept of entertainment, and I understand people that do the TV shows. I have a lot of respect for them because they work very hard at it. But
unfortunately, they work hard.
Unfortunately, it's given the wrong concept to the average American.
Yes. People are going into locations and expecting it to be television. And then they're gravely disappointed when nothing happens. So, you know, they're going and expecting, you know, it to be TV and there's going to be activity every 3-4 seconds. And that's, you know, I explain to people that on television what they're doing is they're doing 13-14 hours of taping and then they're splicing together what they get into an hour. So, you know, you're not going to get something. And sometimes you'll go into a location that's known to be active and you'll get absolutely nothing. So, you know, it's all about, you know, timing and what you can expect to get and taking into account that you might not see or experience anything.
Sometimes in the more legitimate shows, and there are some that aren't quite as legitimate as others, but sometimes in the more legitimate shows, I don't think they realize that what they see on TV is not all of what they filmed or have done. For instance, the first 4 years of Ghost Hunters, there's a lot of locations that listeners aren't aware of that they went to that they just simply couldn't get anything that they could use. I mean, at least give me something. So they just scrapped the whole episode and went on to the next one.
Yes, they did. I'm at Mishkaracon, which is a huge paranormal convention, Sault Ste. Marie, and I have the guys from TWC here that I've been talking to, Mike Gonzalez and Porter and their crew. John Tenney is here. Amy Allen is here. Nick Groff, Amy and Adam from Kindred Spirits. I mean, I've just had a day of connecting with all these people, like-minded people, you know, that have done the television shows. And, you know, even Jeff Belanger is here. I mean, it's just been an amazing day of connecting with people of like mind. So, you know, it's nice to sit down and have them tell you, you know, it's not all that it's cut up, you know, that it's not all that it looks to be. It's not as exciting or you know, you know what I'm saying? It's not all the constantly activity. There'll be times, like you said, with the Ghost Hunters, where they'll tape an entire show, get absolutely nothing, and have to scrap it. It just depends on the particular night and who you have with you and how the spirits are going to interact with that particular person.
Well, it's actually good once you meet these people, too, because I know that there's two types of people that watch the shows. One of them assume, okay, they're all just actors, they're all just in it for this and they're all just in it for that. And then there's the people that over dramatize it, like we've been talking about. But as you're noticing by talking to some of these people, and the very, very few that I've had a chance to meet, and I hope to meet many, many more as I'm going out through the conventions this year, but you learn that they are people, that they, you know, they really do have a concept and they really do have a passion and they love what they're doing. They love the paranormal. And you know, granted, TV, you gotta have a good show, but they really work hard at what they do, and they really believe in what they're doing.
They do, and they're all wonderfully warm, welcoming people in the paranormal. Paranormal community is not like any other kind of entertainment. We're very loving, warm, open, accepting people. I mean, you can walk up to any of these guys, and they'll give you a big hug and sit down and have a sincere conversation with you. which is something that doesn't happen in other entertainment venues. So it's really nice when you go to these conventions because you're getting one-on-one time with people that are actually willing to engage with you.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and that's something that I address a lot. A lot of people that just start out, all they get is the social media community. And listeners, just so that you know, the social media community and the real paranormal community are two different things.
Absolutely different. Completely different. Completely different.
Yeah, there are really some wonderful people in the true paranormal community that, I mean, you might be at awe when you walk up to them and say, oh my God, I saw you on TV for 4 years. But then when you get to know them, they'll sit there and talk to you like they're just a normal person and talk shop.
Yep. They're great. They're great guys. And, you know, I've enjoyed this weekend so far. I'm actually not doing anything with this particular show. I'm just here having fun, which I've never done before. Every time I go to a convention, I'm working, you know, I'm speaking or I'm, you know, doing readings. So this is really nice just to get on the other side of the table and walk around and get to talk to people. So I'm having a ball.
It is fun when you get a chance to do that. I know that speaking early on, I haven't done it for quite a long period in time. You tend to forget that aspect because you're at your booth, you're introducing yourself, you're talking about your stuff or your business or whatever you're doing. Then you get up on stage and you do the same thing, and that's pretty much your whole day.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and I'm a really engaging, open, loving person. So when people come up to me, I'll spend a good 45 minutes talking to them. You know, so, you know, I'm the kind of person that enjoys talking to people that like to hear what I have to say. So it's nice this weekend, though, just to be able to, you know, step outside of that for a minute and just enjoy being here and, you know, hanging around with these people and getting to know them on a personal level. So it's a lot of fun.
Well, I'm glad to see that you're enjoying yourself, definitely. I should probably get back into asking you a little bit more about mediumship. And
sure, absolutely. Let's go.
One of the things that I always ask, because I love the different perceptions that come out, and usually I get the same type of answers, but I'm fascinated with this because most people assume when you're talking to a ghost – that you're seeing something grotesque or you're seeing something awful or you're seeing the incident that happened. When these people, and I'm going to call them people, I'm not going to call them ghosts because that's basically what they are even though they passed on. When they come to see you or when they visit you and they tell you about their experiences, how do they physically come to you? How do they look?
Well, I'm not going to mislead you and say they don't come to me in their death state sometimes because they do. Sometimes they come to me and they're, you know, like in their death state or however they passed on. But a good majority of the time, they're smiling, they're happy, they're wearing their favorite clothes, they're excited. You know, they've moved past the physical body and into their energy state, and they're happy. They're no longer in physical pain. They've let go of all their mental issues in most cases once they've, you know, graduated to that point. And you know, a lot of the spirits I talk to come to talk to their relatives, and they're happy and they're excited to talk to their family. And, you know, and they're looking their best. You know, sometimes if you like to die at 80, and when I see them, they look like they did in their 20s. Because, you know, you can kind of pick and choose how you want to look once your energy. I mean, you can mold yourself anything you want to be. But most cases, people that have passed have resolved the issues that they had when they were alive. And they're just happy and in a good place and looking good and happy and smiling. So most of the people that I connect with are in a very good place and looking there like they did when they were at the happiest point in their life.
Now, generally, the ones that do come to you that had tragic events and they're still in that presentation, are those the ones that usually feel they have to tell their story or they just simply have unfinished business?
Yeah, I mean, if they're looking for resolution or they're looking for answers, a lot of the cases that come forth where people are in their death state or, you know, as you mentioned, you know, not looking their best are because they died suddenly. Or, you know, they weren't expecting to pass on. And they're like, what happened to me? where am I? You know, I was just driving my car, and all of a sudden I'm not in my body anymore. Can you explain to me what I'm going through? You know, I've had spirits come to me, sopped and wet, that have drowned, and you know, they're like, please, you know, help me get closure. I don't know what happened to me. And as I was explaining earlier, a lot of people have predisposition about what death is going to be like. And, you know, they say go to the light, but a lot of people are afraid because death has been turned into this horrible, scary thing that's going to happen to you when you leave your body. You know, they're not sure what's beyond that light. You know, was I a good enough person? You know, am I going someplace bad because of some of the bad things that I've done? And a lot of people hesitate to go to that next, you know, go to that next door because they're afraid of what they're going to find behind it. And that's a lot of the spirits that I speak to are afraid to go on until that, to that next stop and find out what's beyond that next door. It's like I explain to people, just because you die does not mean you lose your free will. You still have free will. You can still make decisions. And if you decide that you're not ready to move on to the next level, then you won't. You know, you have to reconcile with yourself. Your issues, you have to work through some of those things before you're ready to transcend to the next point.
I've always been curious, and maybe you can, this is something I forgot to ask Susan, but I've always been curious on this, and I have asked a couple of people off of the show, but maybe getting another perspective will give me a little bit more insight. Everybody talks about to the light. Mm-hmm. Now, do you physically see them, if you guide them, do you physically see them actually go somewhere, or do they just move on, say thank you, and they're just gone?
Well, sometimes they'll – okay, the light is a representation of the other side, okay? It's what everybody expects to see. So let's say – in our culture, it's the light. You know, you see the light, you know that you can pass on through that light and get to the other side. So if they're expecting that the light is what's going to take them to the other side, then that's what they see. So what I see is what they're seeing. So if they're looking into the light, they'll turn and look back and smile, and then they'll walk into the light. But, yeah, I walk them through up to the light, and then they walk into it, and then they're, you know, they're gone.
So it really could be anything. It's just going to the next area. For me, it would be a door. I don't see a light, but if somebody were to guide me and something happened, I'd probably see a door pop up and walk right through it.
Right. It's whatever your personal perception might be. In different religions, it might be something else. I mean, in Buddhism, it might be a temple that they walk into. It all depends on your culture and what you're expecting to see and what you're expecting your experience to be.
See, that's what I would perceive it as being. I know a lot of people, when they discuss it, they just say they walk into a big ball of light. Of course, you have theological and non-theological. They go to heaven. They go here. They go there. To me,
right,
it would be, you know, it's my happy moment. So it would be, oh, okay, there it is, and just walk right through the door or whatever it is, and there's my happy moment. Maybe it's going to be all my family, and I just see it all pop up, and I walk right over to them, whatever it is.
Yep. Well, one guy that had a near-death experience that I talked to said when he passed, he walked to a lake, and he sat down on a bench, and that was it for him. He just sat down over this peaceful lake, and that's where he sat, you know, for a few minutes until they brought him back from his body, but he said it was the most peaceful place he's ever been.
Huh.
It was just water lapping against the shore and a bench, and he just sat there and was relaxed and the happiest he's ever been. He wasn't in any pain anymore, and then, you know, they obviously brought him back, but he said that's what it was for him. So, you know, that's where he went. And
well,
I've
that
had
would
other
make
people
sense.
That have had negative experiences where they've saw bad things. You know, where they've you know, walked into a tunnel that was shooting fire out of the walls and things. There was one guy that I talked to that said that when he had his near-death experience, he walked into a tunnel and it was like fire was shooting at him and things. And he turned around and ran back out and went to his body because he's like, I'm, you know, he's thinking in his head, I'm going to hell. This is, you know, I did something wrong in my life and this is my retribution for what I did. So, you know, I think it all depends on what you're expecting and if you're feeling that you were a bad person, maybe that's what you're going to see. Or if you were a good person or you feel you're in a good place when you pass, you're probably going to see the light.
Yeah, that would make sense. It's basically, if you're holding on to things, self-doubts and so forth, then you would probably hold on to those even when you decide to move on in some instances. So that might reflect to what's going on. Because the mind is a fascinating place as it is, and if our mind carries on somewhere else, so do all of our thoughts, all of our emotions, all of our regrets. Everything keeps going.
Everything, yeah, this consciousness and your soul are, where I explain it, are right in the middle of your body. I think that's why when people have anguish or heartache, it's always in the core of your body, because I think that's, in my personal opinion, where your soul sits. And when you pass, everything that you retained during life, you know, all your memories, all your emotions, everything stays with you. I mean, you're conscious of everything that happened to you when you're alive. You're just not in a physical form anymore. You still have all of your same emotions, all of your same thoughts, your personality. Everything transcends with you, you know, until you move on to the next step where all is wiped clean and, you know, you get to re-examine everything you did in your life, and you pick up on the lessons that you had and what you were supposed to learn, what you didn't learn. And I don't know if you believe in reincarnation. I happen to, but I believe that, you know, every life that we cycle through, it's a new lesson. It's a new experiences and things to add, you know, to our journey till we reach, you know, the final dimension where we're all done. That's the way I look at it. I mean, to me, the Earth is a classroom where we come to learn new things.
Well, I would believe that to a certain point. I had the privilege one time of speaking to a Buddhist priest that the way he explained it was similar to that, that we all travel through cycles of life in order to come to the ultimate peace, so to speak.
Exactly.
And each road we take, we come back and we take it again. Now, we may not remember all of that, but we take in some of the experiences from the last life, and we have a chance to advance that to the next one, and the next one, ultimately, if we do it properly, getting to a specific level.
Yes, right.
So, I mean, a lot of that makes sense. A lot of that adds up with things such as deja vu or having the feelings, you know, I've been here before. Having intuition where you know you shouldn't do something or you're about to do something and, well, this just isn't right. You know, all of those things would come from what you did before. So you know it's not right now because you did it before. You just don't know.
Right. One of the chapters I'm writing in my book on past life regressions is about phobias. People that are afraid of drowning. People that are afraid of heights. Why? Why are we afraid of these things? And I think some of it's related to past lives. You know, did we drown? You know, did we fall from a height? Why are we having these irrational fears of things that we shouldn't be afraid of?
Well, it could be.
Yeah, and that's something I'm going to be exploring is why do these people have fear of bridges, for instance? I mean, I'm terrified of bridges. I hate going over them, and there's no rational explanation for why I'd be afraid of a bridge.
I have very little fear. That's kind of a terrible thing to say, but I have very, very little fear. I'll dive into almost anything, and it's hurt me. I've broken legs, I've broken arms, I broke my ribs, smacked into a cliff one time. There's a long story behind that. We won't get into that.
Oh, but, wow.
But I can see where, and we all have our own self-conscious fears. I mean, my fear has always been not being able to take care of my family. You know, it's always right on your mind. You got responsibility. You have to take care of your family. You have to take care of other people. And what happens if that doesn't happen and you fail?
Right.
But they would carry on.
How do you know
on
that's not from a past life? That somehow you failed.
Somehow I failed. Or maybe that's what I carry on to every life is the concentration on not failing in the first place, which is why I'm worried about failing.
Right. That could very well be.
I had an actual near-death experience, believe it or not. A long time ago, I got into a car accident, and it halted my life, but what I do remember from the situation was very unusual. I remember everybody standing over me, and I wasn't conscious at the moment, and the doctor said, I'm not quite sure why he's not conscious. There's no resuscitation we have to worry about, but something's going on. And I remember hearing the heart measure go down to beep for a brief minute, and I remember standing outside of my body. I remember seeing everybody around me for that moment. And I also remember turning around and I saw my aunt, and she just kind of looked and said, "Honey, it's going to be okay. Just go back." Yeah,
so
and then I woke back
passed?
Up. Yeah, my aunt had passed for almost 10 years. So it was a unique experience.
She was there to usher you back into your body because you're not done yet.
Yep. Yeah, well, that's what I think. I've had all kinds of scientists give me other explanations, but, you know, it's just kind of irony that somebody I hadn't thought of in almost 10 years was standing right behind me to say, you know, it's just not time yet. Go back.
Yeah. I've talked to a few scientists about this, and they say it's just your brain firing off synapses. It's not really happening. It's just a way to help you not be afraid when you die. It's just, you know, a natural response to the brain shutting down. I'm like, meh, I don't buy that.
Well, part of it, I think, see, that's where I think people get misunderstood. Science only looks at it from one area, and then the paranormal looks at it from another area. And I think both of them actually do interact a little bit. If the conscious leaves the body, then theoretically what's holding the body together, just like a computer or anything else, would fire the synapses, would start the process. The mind would start trying to figure out how to work its way around that, and then after it leaves, continue to do so.
Right.
So I think it's just we haven't got to the point to where we can mesh the two together and agree, okay, you're both right.
Right. I think eventually we'll get to the point where they'll have some kind of testing to watch what happens when a body dies. I mean, watch it electronically, see what happens, what changes. If there is a transition where something actually physically leaves the body, the energy leaves the body. We just haven't gotten that far yet. But I think eventually that'll be something. I mean, the one thing people fear most is death. Uh-huh. Everyone is afraid to die. I mean, they can say, oh, yeah, I'm not afraid of death. Everybody, when it comes down to it, and in your last moments of your life, everybody has that fear of, oh, my Lord, this is it. I'm done. And survival instinct is so strong in human beings that, we want to avoid that at any cost. So I think there's always that fear of death. I think it's more of a fear of an unknown. I mean, I'm not afraid of death because I know what's coming, but that doesn't mean I want to die tomorrow either.
Yeah, there's always still going to be the question of that, or leaving everybody around you, the people you love. There's always going to be the self-doubt and the wonder of what comes next. And that's a big part of what keeps with the paranormal. The fear of death and the want to hold on are two major things in the paranormal. One of the debates that I always have in my classes, people jump too quickly these days to it's a ghost. Now, you have experiences where you can see that it's a ghost, where you can physically explain that it's a ghost. But from the person that's standing on the other side, we don't have that ability. So we have to define what a ghost is. And a ghost right now is just a word because we really want to hold on to things, and we really don't want to – when somebody passes on, the one thing we don't want to accept is somewhere along the line they may go somewhere else.
That they cease to exist.
Yeah, that they cease to exist, or they move on and we'll never see them again until we move on, wherever that is. So we hold on to it, and we want to put a physical representation every time. And we have to figure out what that physical representation is before we can physically say, oh, yep, there it is.
Right.
And that's where mediums have the ability that from the standard researcher, the standard scientist, and the standard aspect of myself, even though I have had the privilege of seeing an apparition before that I can't explain, and I believe we all can.
I've seen many of them.
If we open up, I've seen some for a while. I was actually very active. I could hear them. I saw a few of them, but and I think it was just because they knew I was aware. So You know, if you're around
Right.
and nobody's paying attention to you and you can talk to somebody, why not talk to them?
Exactly. If somebody's got a, you know, a sign over their head that says, "Hey, I can see you," of course you're going to go, "Hey, oh, that person can see me. I'm going to go talk to them. You know, I haven't talked to anybody in, you know, 20 years. I'm going to go talk to this person. They can see me. They can hear me." So, you know, that's common sense, even, you know, for a spirit to say, "Hey, if this person can see me and they're openly inviting me to come engage with them, of course I'm going to."
Yeah, and or want to hear me or so forth. One of the experiences that first alerted me to that, even though I'd heard all kinds of strange things throughout my life, and everybody knows, including yourself, I came from a haunted location where I saw all kinds of crazy things. But one of the first things that made me realize that was my wife was getting a surgery because she has epilepsy, and it was a minor surgery, nothing to worry about. It's called a VNS that helps her with her epilepsy. But she was terrified because she's never had a major surgery in her life. So she stayed up for days, and I finally got her to sleep. And I remember waking up, and I saw a little old lady kind of stroking her face. And she looked and went, "Shh." So I explained it to her the next day. And I said, "Andrea, do you know a little old lady that has a short bun in her hair? She'd be roughly about this heavy. She consistently wore this type of outfit." And she said, "That's my grandmother."
Aww.
So I woke up and saw her grandmother telling her, "Hey, look, it's going to be okay."
Yeah.
And then 2 weeks after that, she saw somebody because we had just moved into a really old house. She kept seeing somebody. And I said, "Well, you know, I've been hunting the paranormal for years. How come you can see it and I can't see it?" And then sure as I'll get out, she goes in the other room, goes to sleep. I'm almost half asleep and I hear in my left ear, and I could feel the breath here in my left ear, "Because I don't want you to."
Oh, wow. Yeah, be careful what you wish for sometimes.
So I started to realize that, you know, these things are out there. I had one personal experience way before that I still couldn't explain, but I've said it over and over again, so I won't get into much detail about it, but it ended up helping out the police department in Delaware quite by accident about a year later of a young girl that had passed away. And she had been forgotten about, and we moved into the apartment she was in, and I actually physically saw her, and she walked me to where she died. But it opens your mind.
It does. It certainly does. Yeah. I've had countless experiences with spirits. Some of them very enlightening and wonderful and sweet, and some not so much, but every experience I've had has taught me something new about the afterlife and what happens after we pass. So, you know, I'm here to do this work. You know, I realized that at a young age, this is what I'm here to do. I'm here to help people get answers and figure out what happens to us after we pass. So, you know, every experience, good or bad, is still a learning experience.
Now, I'll ask you this, because I particularly don't call them this name, but what is your take on demons?
I think that actual encounters with demons are extremely rare. Extremely rare. I have only actually witnessed one exorcism in my life, and that was performed by the Catholic Church. I think it's exceedingly rare. I think most of what we're coming across are what I like to call non-human spirits, which means they've never been alive. And I just think, you know, I know a lot of people don't believe in different dimensions, but I believe that sometimes, like, for instance, shadow people, I don't think they've never been alive, but people have seen them in this dimension. And I think a lot of the things people confuse as demons are actually just non-human entities that are really nasty. I mean, a demon is a completely different ball game, and they're nothing that anybody wants to mess with.
It is, listeners, just so that you know, an actual encounter with what would be termed a demon. And there's a lot of differences to define throughout the Catholic Church and other churches what a demon really is. But being one of those people similar to her that has had the privilege of, and I refused to go in the room, actually. I stayed outside of the room because of some of the things that happened during an exorcism. It's a whole different ballgame. It's not glamorous.
No, it's not.
No. It's a very scary thing.
It is. It's terrifying. I did not go out of the room. I stayed. I'm not allowed to talk about it because the Catholic Church restricts any information about how an exorcism is performed from getting out. But it was not. It was awful. It was absolutely awful. Like you said, it's not a TV movie. It's someone's pain and agony and anguish, and it's horrible. And I have to say this because it needs to be said: the only people performing exorcisms or dealing with anything like this should be someone that's ordained by the Catholic Church to deal with it, or you could end up seriously hurting somebody.
Absolutely. And just so that the listeners know, there are not very many ordained priests in the United States that do exorcisms. You have a lot of branches to go through. There's a lot to it. It took me quite a number of years to actually get the honor and privilege to speak to Rome and to speak to a few people and to speak to an exorcist up here in the United States that's ordained by the Catholic ministry to do so. And took the schooling and understands everything and actually spent time in Rome to understand that, it's not something to play around with. You really need to be trained in it.
That's one thing that concerns me is I've been seeing people getting certificates for demonologists.
Yeah.
That concerns me.
And here's the thing, just so that everybody knows.
It's not a real thing. I mean, you are sanctioned by the Catholic Church to perform an exorcism, but as far as I know, they don't teach demonology. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, actually, they do teach demonology, and there is actually demonology, which is the study of demon, but it's not in the form that people think it is. The Catholic Church, as a part of their process, do put you through schooling called demonology. Now, you can choose to actually go into exorcism and learn how to go from there, which is a totally different practice. Or you can choose to continue to study that information, which is basically just the history and application of the term demon and how it applies to the Bible.
Right. That does not give – a demonologist cannot perform an exorcism. I've had people say, well, I'm a demonologist. I can go in and perform it. No, you cannot.
No, absolutely
you
not.
You have knowledge of what a demon is, and that's what demonology is what I've learned is that demonology is the study, as you said, of the demonic.
It's the study of the term demon and how it applies to biblical text and other text, which defines where demons fall into place. Just like any ology, it's just a study. That's all it is. You do not fight demons with it. You do not go out into the world as an exorcist. In fact, to my understanding from what I've been told, demonologists, we'll call it a demonologist, the person that studies demonology is not even present at an exorcism.
No, they're not. No. No, they just have the knowledge, and sometimes what an exorcist will do is refer to a demonologist looking, I think this is the demon I might be tangling with. Can you give me some background on him? Can you give me the research? And then they'll work together in that way, but they're not actually physically at the exorcism.
Yep. Exactly. And that's it's a very good thing to point out because there's a lot of falsification out there in the paranormal right now that you can get degrees in demonology and learn how to become an exorcist and you can fight demons. And the answer is no, you can't. The Catholic Church can.
And as I said, if you do this wrong, you'll get yourself killed or you get somebody else killed. It's not a game, and it's very serious, and people's lives are at risk, including the priest performing the exorcism is putting his life on the line to do this, and it just scares me that people are going out and getting a certificate that says I'm a demonologist when they don't really understand what that means.
It is a very scary thing and a very dangerous thing, to be frankly honest with you, when you're messing around with the unknown, to claim any type of education in something that can it's hard to explain. I guess that's the easiest way to say it, but it's just you don't want to do it in the first place. Yeah, it takes a very special, dedicated person to go to the level of being able to fight what you can call a demon in the first place.
Right, exactly.
And it takes years and years and years of honing that experience and education. And even then, sometimes if you actually get the opportunity to talk to a true exorcist, they'll tell you they're not ready for it.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, it's a battle. It's definitely a battle. I know a couple that work with the Catholic Church. They're not exorcists, but they're in the training phase of it. And it's a long dedication. I mean, you dedicate your life to being an exorcist, and that's it. I mean, you have to be completely 100% focused on this. And luckily, their services aren't needed very often, thank goodness. But yeah, it's nothing to mess with. And I just I handle some of the more volatile haunting cases, but I know when I've reached a point where I have to turn this over to the Catholic Church and I will refer them, because I can only go so far with it. I mean, if I'm seeing all the red flags that are telling me, this isn't a human spirit, this isn't an inhuman spirit, this is something beyond what I can handle, then I get out of it and I pass it on.
Oh, absolutely.
I know I can't tangle with that. I'm not equipped.
And that's something to take very importantly in, listeners, in any field. It's kind of like I can deal with the science, the research, the logistics, the physical and the non-physical, but even myself, if I get to a certain point where I'm at a haunting and I know it's a haunting at this point, it can't logically be explained, I've collected as much scientific data as I can, I know my limits. I'll call somebody to take care of the problem.
The way I like to explain it is I could put new brakes on my car, but I certainly can't drop a new engine in it.
Exactly.
I'm not trained to put an engine in my car. I can change the brake pad, sure, but I'm not equipped to take the engine out and put a brand new one in and hook it all up. I don't have the expertise for that. You need someone that knows how to do that. So
yeah,
you got to be very careful.
Yeah, and the worst mistake I have ever seen, and I've heard it thousands and thousands of times, are people that think they can do that because they've self-learned themselves and they've went online and researched some things and so forth. And I can tell you from experience, listeners, being on the research and scientific end, collecting the data, being able to come up with that information, that I have no idea how to tell a ghost to pass on. If I can confirm that I think something is there, I have to get a hold of somebody that knows what they're doing. It's naive of me to do otherwise, because then I'm not only endangering the residents if there are personal people there by changing it the wrong way, I'm also not giving the benefit to whatever needs to pass on or move on or however you want to explain it. I'm basically just ruining the whole situation.
Right. Well, sometimes the paranormal team will go in and do an investigation, and they'll amp everything up, and then they leave. Uh-huh. They're not – if you're going to be a responsible paranormal investigation team, don't go in and just amp the stuff up and then leave these people with this escalated situation. Hand it over to somebody that can go in, like me or another medium that's well-known and has a good track record, to come in and clean out that activity if they don't want it. Don't go in there and amp it up and then walk away and say, oh, I'm sorry, I don't know what to do next. That's part of being paranormal investigators, the follow-through and making sure that these people are rescued, for lack of a better word.
And understand your limitations involved in it. I there are too many young investigators think they can do everything, and the reality is that's impossible. Just like any field, there are people that specialize in any individual area of the field. And yeah, you can learn a little bit about it, but know your limitations.
Right. I mean, you wouldn't go to your general practitioner for brain surgery.
Yeah, exactly.
You wouldn't go into the office and say, Doc, cut my head open, and fix my brain. You'd go to a specialist for that. So you got to look at it the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I know we've taken a lot of time chatting here, and I know I'm probably on my last 5 or 6 minutes, so Donald's going to chime in. Let's tell the listeners where to find you, if you have any websites, any new things that are coming out that you want people to visit, things along those lines.
Absolutely. I have on Facebook, I have my public figure page, which is the Motor City Medium. I also have a Facebook page under Rebecca Esmach. I'm also part of the Glass Paranormal team, which is G.L.A.Paranormal.com, and we have a website. If you click on my name on the website, it'll send me an email. I also have can be reached by email at themotorcitymedium@gmail.com.
Beautiful. Well, listeners, you've been listening to Paranormal Truth and Reality. Of course, I'm your host, Christopher Houston. We've been with Rebecca Schmuck, which took a delightful bunch of time talking about a lot of different things. Of course, we always have great conversations when we have a chance to do it. Next week, we will have another exciting guest on. I do encourage you to take a look at that. We will be doing a brief live to give you updates on Generation Truth. Yes, that's right. We are not finished. Generation Truth will be still producing through 2021 through 2023. We've got a lot of exciting things, including a new radio show and radio station about to come up. Well, I don't have the radio show. I'm just going to dub over these from BBS from time to time and stay with Donald. But we've got a lot of exciting new guests that are going to be on and a lot of exciting, well-known hosts, so I encourage you to listen to WCGT and, of course, tune into BBS. BBS is the largest digital radio station in the United States of America, and if you decide to go with a digital radio station as a host or a podcaster, otherwise, I do encourage you to contact them first. Go with the best. Go with BBS. That's Paranormal Truth and Reality for the evening. I'm going to end you the same way I do every single week, and that is as you're learning in the paranormal. When you're actually going out, when you're studying, whether you're a beginner, whether you're advanced, there's always places to learn and there's always places to understand where your limitations are. Don't claim to be something that you're not and know when to hand it over to the specialist that does the best job. We'll talk to you next week. I hope you enjoyed the show.